Nau mai, haere mai. Welcome to the Maxim Institute podcast. My name is Jason, and I'm the Communications Manager at Maxim Institute. This is our weekly short-form podcast. These podcasts are released in tandem with our weekly column and are a chance for you to hear in-depth from the column's author about some of the thinking that went into producing their final piece.
Today, we speak with Communications Manager Jason Heal about his most recent column.
And we've got Jason on the podcast. Welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me. Always good to be here in the hot seat.
Well, yeah, we're going to put you under the griller. So here's the deal. MPs haven't had a pay rise for 6.5 years. Wages generally have gone up by 28% over that time. Should MPs get a pay rise?
That is a very good question.
You paused.
I did, yes. Well, it's because it's a very good question. That's a complicated question, yeah. I think, because in the middle of a cost of living crisis, you have people who have a base salary of $163,961 a year. That's for a backbench MP who doesn't have any responsibilities. So someone who
so
just
you
goes
think-
and...
You think it's pretty good already?
I think it's definitely pretty good. I mean, the median salary is around $61,000, so it's quite above what the average worker earns. So in the middle of a recession or a cost of living crisis, it's a difficult case to make that those people who are earning far above what the average person is
should get another third. So what's a third of 160,000, something like 50 grand, right? So it's over 200 grand.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there's the counter argument to that, which is if you pay peanuts, you're going to get monkeys. And there are often complaints about the kind of MPs we're attracting. What's your answer to that?
Yeah, that's right. There's often a lot of people going, you need to good money to attract good people. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think politics is about passion as well, passion for making a difference, passion for serving, passion for seeing the country and the people in the country do well. And I think there's examples, like our Prime Minister is a classic example of someone who's taken a huge pay cut. His successor at Air New Zealand, I think they reported his annual salary is $3.1 million. And so he's definitely not earning that as Prime Minister. He's earning $400,000+. So he's taken a pay cut for that. And there's plenty of other examples across the House. Nicole McKee and a couple of other ACT MPs were consultants and ran their own businesses.
Earning quite significantly more than $163,000.
Per annum. And so I don't think you always get monkeys when you pay peanuts. I think
so. What you're arguing is that we're not actually talking about a job here in the traditional sense.
Yeah, I think the comparison that's often made between corporations and the government is not a fair comparison. I don't think that you can say that MPs or the Prime Minister or ministers in cabinet are the bosses of the country, right? They don't employ us. They don't give us.
Well, they're in a sense the stewards of the country.
Exactly.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they should be accountable to us and be there to serve and have a vision for the flourishing of the public and the public good.
So, in essence, I guess what you're saying, somewhat, is that there needs to be a certain level of humility to enter public service, particularly being an MP.
That's right. And I find it fascinating that in the past, the salary difference, the gap between, people who might be considered working class like school teachers, secondary school teachers, and public servants was far less. So in 1976, the average secondary school teacher's salary was $12,370 per annum, which sounds ridiculous today, you think about it. But the MP salary, average MP salary, including all their benefits, and we forget that MPs have accommodation allowances, travel allowances, expense accounts, things like that, including, was only $14,097. So only just under $2,000 difference.
A sixth more, which I don't know what secondary school teachers are typically
paid. I think it's around an experienced, high-quality secondary school teacher is about 90K. So
So there's been a shift, hasn't there?
A big shift, yeah.
Is this part of your argument, is that already we are rewarding them to a sufficient level, don't put the price up again?
Yeah, there's a big gap between these people. So 90 to 160 is a big gap, 70K almost. So the more that gap widens, the more there is a gap between the elites, for want of a better term, and those that they serve in the public. And that's not a good thing.
Mm. Why isn't it a good thing?
Because then they're out of touch in that sense, right?
So there's like a self-sustaining
echo chamber of some
whereas
sense.
We yeah. need to feed in. Here's a counter argument though. If you pay people a significant amount more than they will earn in their, I suppose, more ordinary jobs, won't that attract those people? So it's like that there'll be a seen as a desirable sort of a job.
Yeah, I think you should pay them more, but not significantly more. I think that's where I'm landing, and where I keep coming up against. It's like, yes, they should be
not,
more.
So not one third more.
Yeah, not a huge amount more than what they would be earning as an average worker in the country.
So what should that be?
You try to nail down a number, mate. I don't know what was the 6%. So 90, okay, so about 100K. I'd say.
Okay,
yeah, as a base salary,
right. Yeah. Rather than the 160K that it is now.
Yeah. If they're gonna, because then
if they're gonna put the service forward,
yeah. Because I think there's then the ability for them to steward the economy well, so that if the median income goes up, their own income goes up as well. So there's incentives there. Maybe I'm just being harsh, you know.
Do you think you're going to be popular with this
not
view?
Not at all. Not at all. But I'm not here to be popular, Tim.
All right, Jason, thank you very much. We'll let you recede into unpopularity. Yeah,
thanks, mate.
There has been much talk recently about how the country needs to be run like a business. In some sense, this has merit. For example, the recently instituted use of cost-benefit analysis to evaluate policy is a positive step. Tax dollars don't come from nowhere. They come from the pockets of hardworking Kiwis. They should be spent wisely. There's also been a lot of talk about how MPs' salaries haven't increased for 6.5 years. During this time, there's been a cost-of-living crisis, which could be said to have been created by MPs, but that's another story. However, wages generally rose by 28% over the same period. You'd apply the same logic to MP salaries, right? I'm not so sure that the business argument works here. This view fails to acknowledge the unique nature of what our MPs do. They're not CEOs or business people presiding over a workforce. They are public servants representing the various interests of the nation for our communal good. They work for us, not the other way around. But if you pay peanuts, some argue, don't you get monkeys? Possibly, but not always. Think of MPs such as Christopher Luxon, Don Bidwell, or Nicole McKee, who've come from the private sector and are taking a pay cut. Moreover, the purpose of having elected representatives is for them to serve the public interest, not to enrich themselves. If MP salaries are made overly lucrative and competitive with top private sector jobs, it creates incentives misaligned with public service. Critics may argue that modest salaries could open the door to corruption and undue influence, but our country is routinely held up as a beacon of probity. Also, I'm not sure I would call a base salary of $163,961 a year modest. We must also acknowledge the perks and privileges that already accompany the role of an MP, from travel allowances, $320 per day, and expense accounts starting at $7,000, to accommodation subsidies starting at $36,400. When combined with a reasonable salary, these benefits should provide a comfortable standard of living without fostering a sense of entitlement or detachment from the realities ordinary New Zealanders face. At the heart of this issue lies a broader concern: the growing chasm between the political class and the citizens they represent.
Commentator Josie Pagani has pointed out that there is now a class divide between those in the House and those out of it, with 100% of our politicians coming from the professional and managerial class. Compare that to the 70s when 20% of our MPs were from the trades. Now there are none. At that time, an MP's salary was comparable to that of a secondary school teacher, $14,097 including allowances versus $12,370. We risk cultivating a homogenous governing elite disconnected from the diverse perspectives and experiences that shape our nation. So, is being an MP a mere transaction where compensation rules? Or is the job a higher calling, a trust bestowed upon those who hope to improve the lives of its citizens? That's the $163,000 question. Thanks for listening to the Maxim Institute podcast. If you'd like to hear more from us and keep up with the rest of our research and analysis of politics and policy in New Zealand, you can sign up on the homepage of our website to get our monthly forum email and invitations to future Maxim Institute events. You can search and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. From the team at Maxim, mā te wā, goodbye for now.